kwakuwamfunyako nauvuku na untukufu hata milele.
Broadcasting from high above the reserve, this is Radio Harambe. Thank you once again for tuning in to Radio Harambe, the companion podcast to our website, jomboeveryone.com. I am Dave McBride, broadcasting, as always, from the Radio Harambe studios. However, we have moved to our winter studio, our brand new winter studio, and joining me from somewhere in the world, probably in a tent somewhere, it's Safari Mike. Mike, how are you?
Oh, Jumbo Dave, I'm in Kota Donana.
Kota Donana.
Donana.
These are two different words?
Yes.
Kota Donana. I wouldn't have any idea. I'm out on this one.
Not even a guess, huh?
Kota, K-O-N-T-A.
C-O-T-A.
C-O-T-A.
Kota, yes.
Kota.
And then Donana is D-O-N-A-N-A.
I'm going to say South America.
Not a bad guess, Dave. I'm in Spain.
Well, I kind of identified the correct language, but that's really
yes.
It.
Yes, that's it. We're here studying the Iberian lynx, which is a lot
really?
Like the lynx that we have here in the United States. This one, however, is extraordinarily endangered. It is limited to the Mediterranean oak forests of Spain and a small portion of Portugal. We fear that there are only about 150 of these animals left in the world, probably only about 30 to 40 breeding females, and wow. They're located in two different national parks. Kota Donana in Spain is one of them.
Yeah, wildlife in Europe has got to be a difficult thing to try to sustain. Certainly habitat for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it once was widespread throughout Spain, Portugal, and even a good portion of France, but now it's limited to two very small areas.
It looks essentially like the American lynx?
Yep, it does, pretty much.
Wow, that's really cool. I was reading today about the northern white rhino is down to six animals left
yeah.
in the wild.
I know.
I was just reading that the other day, or actually yesterday. I guess one had died earlier in the week or maybe last month or something like that from natural causes. It wasn't mm-hmm. poached, but there's so few of them left that we're probably going to see an extinction of them in our next couple of years.
When you're down to that many animals, there's almost no chance.
Yeah. Yeah, there really isn't. And I guess they've had a hard time even breeding in captivity. And
yeah.
So anyway, on that wonderful note, go to our conservation page and hit go see Save the Rhino if you want to help in that regard. On today's show, Mike and I are going to discuss news from Disney's Animal Kingdom, the rest of Walt Disney World, and then in our final segment, Mike is going to open his lost Animal Kingdom file. But before we do that, let's get right into the local news, and we'll start off with a little holiday cheer. Thanksgiving is coming next week, and that means the operating hours at the Animal Kingdom magically increase, despite the often repeated need for the animals to sleep somewhere around 5 p.m. in the afternoon. This means guests will have a great opportunity to visit the park after the sun goes down, and as we always say here on this show, the Animal Kingdom is in itself a different and fantastic place after the sun goes down. And Mike, you also told me right as we were going on the air that the Christmas tree is now up, correct?
The Christmas tree came up today, apparently. And also
today being a couple of days before you're listening to this.
November 19th, how about we put it that way? Okay. And by the time you listen to this, which is November 23rd, which I guess is what, next Monday?
Oh, you're asking me when the 23rd is?
Yeah, yes. That's okay. A little birdie told me that there's going to be some themed, you know, Christmas food and beverages coming to the Animal Kingdom. So,
really?
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Like at the kiosks or something?
I told you everything I know.
Oh, okay. Well, that's not a whole lot of information.
No, not really. Best I got.
That's better than nothing. Here's something that we also know. It appears some of the changes to Rafiki's Planet Watch have finally been completed, though not all of them, as far as we can tell. The old Wildlife Tracking Center, which is one of the, how do we put it? It's one of the windows you look into to sort of the backstage.
Right.
It is reopened and sort of renamed as the Science Center. The Disney Parks blog this week actually has a description. It says the Science Center, previously known as the Wildlife Tracking Center, is home to the Science Operations Team. The new name reflects this as a location that is fun, interactive, and inspiring, highlighting science using applied means, which is precisely what the Science Operations Team is all about. There's a lot of yada, yada, yada in all this, but basically what they've done is just sort of repackaged and rebranded something that you're probably going to think is pretty familiar anyway, right?
It looked pretty much the same when I looked at it online, so.
Yeah, it's not, I mean, we're waiting for some changes at the affection section to be completed. We don't know yet that they are. They were supposed to have been done by now, but there was a delay, a widely reported delay. I haven't been able to get confirmation if it's reopened or anything like that yet. But we are still waiting on that. Some work being done at Rafiki's. There is, right now, it doesn't seem much of a space you can walk around in Animal Kingdom without seeing some sort of work being done.
Yeah, really. And more is coming.
Yeah, and here, speaking of more is coming, here is a big one that just came to us a couple of days ago, the Flame Tree Barbecue, which is one of the bigger counter service restaurants in the Animal Kingdom, is going to undergo a major refurbishment early next year. It looks like, from what we can understand, it's going to close the first week of January, right after the holiday crowds leave, and probably around the 5th, I think, is the date I've been seeing the most.
Yep.
This is mostly about adding more covered areas to the seating sections, and I think, Mike, I heard covered pathways to the seating area as well.
Much of the seating already is covered. There's those pagodas that we've talked about. My understanding is that the walkways to get from one pagoda to the other, they're going to put some covering there, so that you're not walking out in the rain to get to a covered pagoda. And I also heard that they're going to actually extend the ceiling, I guess, or roof. Out from the counter service section so that people who are waiting online
aren't waiting
standing
in the rain, yeah.
Right. So they'll pull that out more closer to where, like, those benches are and stuff like that, so that people who are out there are not standing in the rain getting ready to order. I mean, once you get up by where you pick up the food and stuff, you're underneath the cover. But up until then, you are not.
The thing that's surprising me about this is that the entire location is going to go down for this whole amount of time. It doesn't seem like that's necessary, though. I don't know the nature behind what they're doing. There's so much seating area there. You would think they would be able to sort of divert guests to a place not being worked on. But it is still going to be, from what we understand, it's going to be down, and it's going to be down probably until April.
Right. And I'm hearing, I don't know if you heard this too, Dave, but that some of the food items that you can get there currently, i.e. like the jumbo turkey leg, for example, will be available at other spots throughout the park.
Yeah, like kiosks kind of thing.
Yeah, during this time period.
We have no more specifics other than that. I wonder if that really is going to end up being the case, but that's what they're saying now, I guess, to sort of fears that there's going to be no place to eat around if they keep shutting everything down, you know.
Well, one thing they could do is, you know, those two kiosks over on the walkway between Africa and Asia, one is Bradley Falls and one is Mr. Kamal's.
Right.
Oftentimes, one of them's closed. You know, they could just keep both of those open all the time to help sort of alleviate some of that.
As sort of a barbecue one. Yeah, they could do that.
They could stick a couple things over there.
Yeah. Yeah, well, if we hear more about this, we'll certainly pass it on. And on to our next story. Mike, we're getting a lot of information off WDWMagic.com this week. Two fairly big stories. One we were really expecting. I don't know if I was expecting this, so I'll start off with the one I wasn't expecting, which is this story that Discovery Island, that they're turning Pizzafari into two locations is what I'm getting out of this.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. It looks like they're going to what WW Magic is reporting is that part of, not the whole thing, but part of Pizzafari is going to be converted into a sit-down restaurant. what the menu is, what the name of the establishment is going to be is unknown as of right now. I'm not sure where they would do it. Obviously, they would need to build...
Yeah, I can't figure that out either.
They would need to build another entrance, because currently there is an there's only the one entrance to the quick service place. You know, you walk in, you pass the bathrooms,
right,
and there's where you can purchase pizza for, you know, whatever.
Right.
And then there's that room right to your left, a relatively large room.
Very large,
Yeah, and then there's more rooms behind that. I guess they can wall off some of those rooms in the back and convert that to a sit-down restaurant, but I would imagine they would have to build a new entrance back there, which is currently, or will be, I guess it's currently, or no, I guess soon, will be blocked off for Avatar stuff. So maybe this is not, I'm not sure. Did WWE Magic have a date in terms of when this will be happening?
Nothing. The only thing they have on here is, the only information really here is table service restaurant. Okay, right. So it's not two counter service locations. Table service restaurant. It is, they are writing that the two, Pizzafari and this yet unnamed restaurant will share parts of the dining space, the current dining space, and will both operate when it's over. Both, you know, they'll both operate within that current dining space. They know no timeline, other than it says 2015. So it
well before Avatar.
It does say 2015, well before Avatar. The thing that comes to mind with me is that when they move the wall from where it originally was back behind Pizzafari up to Pizzafari, we all thought that it was just because they had to do some other kind of work back there. But obviously, you know, other kind of Avatar related work. But obviously, there's a lot more. And here we are, you know, a few months later, or however long it's been, you know, a month or so later, and here we get this. And you know, I would certainly put this in the rumor category, because along with this story, there's no, like we said, no name, no type, no concept art, no nothing.
Right.
It's just, but they're not writing this as a rumor. They're saying that this is what's happening. It's a new table service restaurant is coming, is what they say. It's not a rumored thing. It's happening.
Well, so. And we've talked in the past about how, you know, as the Rivers of Light stuff comes aboard and it becomes a nighttime park, they're going to need to have additional eateries.
Right.
And we'll get to some of that and you know, some more of that soon.
Right.
But one of those things has to be a sit-down restaurant, I think. Currently, there's only three.
Right.
And one of them is Rainforest Cafe, which is almost an afterthought. So they certainly need at least one more in the park, so that people can go sit down and eat and then go out and look at the Rivers of Light. This makes a lot of sense to me, because Pizzafari, to be blunt, is the worst counter service in the park,
sure.
I think.
Sure.
I don't even think it's close.
Yeah.
But it's a beautiful, fun place to eat in. I mean, the decor, very whimsical, very colorful.
Incredible.
I mean,
the artwork is incredible.
Right. It's fun. It's a fun place to sit down and eat. Now, if they had good food there, it would be a great place. So maybe a halfway decent sit-down restaurant would be the way to go. And I think it's a great idea if they can open up some more counter services elsewhere in the park to make this the worst of the sit-downs, at least partially. I mean, the worst of the counter service, excuse me, at least partially a quality, or at least somewhat quality, sit-down restaurant.
I wonder if they're not just going to transition this location away from a counter service eventually. That maybe they're leaving Pizzafari open because Flame Tree's going down.
Right.
So they're going to try to do a lot of the work in the dining room while Pizzafari is still open. And then maybe later on down the line, they're going to close it entirely. I mean, it does seem like a strange story in that you're going to have two locations, two separate locations sharing the same building. That's not unusual. I mean, they do that at Yak and Yeti and other places.
Right.
So that's not unusual. But this came out of nowhere. I mean, we don't even know what to think of it, really.
The other interesting thing, I know, and we'll learn more, obviously, but the other interesting thing about it is, you know, and we may have talked about this in the past, but Avatar itself, that land, is going to require, you know, food options, store options. And when you look at the concept, the model that Joe Rohde, you know, that we saw a few months back and all that kind of stuff, there's really no architecture
right
in Pandora itself.
And it doesn't lend itself for a restaurant.
No, it doesn't. But this is right there.
Right.
I mean, it's right leading exactly to the path, obviously. So maybe this is, you know, the main food area for the Avatar people.
I would think that makes a lot of sense. That is probably what we're getting at. To have a counter service and a table service all right there to the entrance of Pandora is probably, it makes all the logistical sense in the world. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Maybe they'll add some outdoor seating. I mean, there's stuff they could do.
Yeah, definitely.
Plenty of stuff they could do.
Definitely. Should we move on to the next one? The big one?
Yes. Okay. Let's gloat. Ready to gloat?
Well, let me start off by saying, it's been roughly 240 or so days since Mike first reported that we are going to have not just a pathway leading from what is essentially the exit area of Kilimanjaro Safaris, the entrance to Rafiki's Planet Watch. We've talked about this a million times. He reported 240 plus days ago that it was going to be a marketplace. And it has been the worst kept secret going for a while that construction's going on there. We've seen pictures of buildings going up. I've taken a few of these pictures. We've seen overhead shots. We finally now today have, thanks again to WDWMagic.com, have our first bit of concept art.
Right.
As of the time that we're recording this, this is the only place reporting this concept art. It has not been released on the Parks blog. It may come out before this show is released. Who knows? My right. guess is it probably will, just to mess with us. Mm-hmm. But here we go. We got a picture in front of us. We have not only great overhead shots, and Mike earlier last week on Wednesday released photographs of pictures taken from over the fence, over the construction walls. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of information here. We have some story information as well with the WDW Magic. They're writing, that this is going to be a counter service restaurant. They're calling it. I guess
right.
let's see what it says. Particular new merchandise locations, quick service restaurant, plus a walkway. Have at it, Mike.
Well, I mean, the first thing I want to say is, you know, we've been calling it, Dave, the Harambe Market for a long time,
mm-hmm.
and apparently the restaurant's going to be called the Harambe Marketplace.
Right.
We said way back in March of this year, I reported that it was going to be sort of a Sunset Ranch in Hollywood Studios kind of feel to it, where it would be some, you know, smaller kiosks or small counter service places and just sort of a general market, you know, almost like a Sunshine Seasons, but outside or whatever. And WDW Magic is reporting that it will feature a number of walk-up windows. So it's exactly what we said.
Right.
What was it, 240 days ago? Is that what you said?
Something like that, yep.
I didn't go back and calculate. looking at the concept art, do you want to start talking about the concept art?
Well, let me make one small correction, which okay. is according to the article from WDWMagic.com, we have... It's called the Harambe Marketplace. However, the concept art itself calls it the Harambe Market. And you can see it in two different locations.
Yes, it does.
The sign Harambe Market is there. I also want to make a quick thing before we talk about any of the sort of specifics in this, which is we now know what our water tower show set is.
Oh, I was just going to say that.
Yeah, you can see it right on the – if you look at this piece of concept art, it's right on the right hand side. My guess is it's nothing more than aesthetic. It just looks like a clever exhaust fan or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it is nothing more than that. Yeah, let's have at it. I would also juxtapose these with the aerial photographs. You can also find that on our website, jomboeveryone.com. If you scroll down to a news article from, I think, the 12th, you'll find a picture, an overhead picture that Scott Keating took. He's a guy who does this somehow, gets photographs from overhead at Walt Disney World. Despite the no-fly zone, he seems to still be able to do this. what we're seeing in the concept art seems to be slightly different than what we're seeing in what's happening. I would say
the concept art is not dead on, obviously.
Yeah. It's pretty darn close, though, Mike, because you see the building to your left, which on the overhead picture is, which you only see the side of in the concept art. On the overhead picture, you see that there. You see the multiple buildings on your right, okay, and the connection between the two. But this one building in front with the sign Harambe Market and the sort of big, large archway there, that doesn't seem to be as yet built
or might not be built.
Or it's scaled down or something to that effect. We're not really 100% sure.
If you look at the concept art, it's clearly like almost sort of a seating.
Yes.
You can see people like sitting down at tables and eating there.
Right.
Correct.
Right. So I don't know if that's something that's going to be added later.
Who knows?
You know, the aesthetics of it look like they're going to be dead on perfect.
Mm-hmm.
You have your thatched roof. You have your Arabian sort of feel that you have in that side of Africa that you've seen in other portions of Harambe. The one thing that I don't see is an animal exhibit, which I think we both were kind of hoping for. I see flights of wonder going on, but I don't see
not flights of wonder, but winged encounters.
I mean, winged encounters, right?
Right. That's okay.
But yeah,
I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean there won't be an animal exhibit, but yeah, there's nothing here for that.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts?
Well, the first thing that struck me and that I was so happy about was the fact that it said it was going to have African-inspired dishes.
Yeah.
Which means to me that it's not going to be your burger fare. It's going to be fun stuff, you know, different stuff. It also said that there is going to be merchandise locations there, correct?
Yep.
It didn't say shopping. So you don't really get a sense of what that is in this picture, although it could clearly be what's over on the left-hand side that you can't see.
Right.
The buildings themselves, I mean, they talk – the article talks about walk-up windows. I see one walk-up window in that little building all the way over to the right.
Mm-hmm.
Those other windows don't really look like walk-up windows. They look like just plain old windows. So, but who knows? I mean, this is where, you know.
The building that has the flags on the roof, that you really can't tell at all what that is.
Right.
I have a hard time trying to figure that out because there is a sort of an odd fence in front of it.
yeah.
You know, that I'm trying to figure out what they are. People looking at it, somebody coming out with what appears to be a tray in their hand. So I would only assume that might be indoor seating for the counter service.
And maybe that's where the windows are. Maybe it is more of a Sunshine Seasons kind of feel inside there, like four or five pods, you know, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you get your whatever here and whatever there and then find seating somewhere else. Either it's outdoors or underneath these awning type things in the market itself. And when you look at the pictures from Wednesday, one of the first things I thought was, you know, maybe they were building a stage there. This looks like, I think what we were seeing there is these awning things, these sort of coverings for people to sit down, I guess, probably when it rains.
Okay.
I don't know if that makes sense to
you. It does. It makes, yeah, it certainly does.
That's same sort of locale. That doesn't look like, from this concept art, that there's, and one of the things we talked about on our last show is maybe a stage or someplace where Barutica could be more out of the way of the middle of the Harambe. That doesn't look like, that's not in this picture, that's for sure.
Yeah, I don't see that.
So I don't know if that's going to be a part of this.
But man, wouldn't that be great though? I mean, if you had an open-air marketplace and a stage for Barutica to play there with the Tam Tam drummers to play in the middle of the marketplace, man, that would be great. That would really be cool.
It would. I mean, if it's just the Tam Tam here and Barutica over there or whatever. Not that they would necessarily need separate stages, but, you know, those are some of the first things that come to my mind, as well as the obvious, we now know what the water tower is.
Right. And there's, you know, you see some certain covered areas, some open areas. You see the carts in front of you, obviously the produce carts, and some more covered seating in that area there that kind of looks a little bit like the Dawa Bar kind of construction there, at least the way it's sort of laid out.
One of the things we had reported way back when was that one of the ideas was to get the fruit market out of them sort of right in front of the Kilimanjaro safaris and sort of open up that area a little bit more for the safari and move it over here somewhere. Although I don't see it, that kind of could be what that those carts are over there. So I believe it is going to go over there.
There are two things that are sort of a mystery. We've already said one, which is that one building. Also, Mike, if you look at the building and go down to the bottom and just to your right a little bit, you'll see what is obviously a sign for something being built there. It is like a wood, looks like sticks of wood built as the posts for the sign. And some sort of archway that almost looks like it's something you'd walk underneath to go in to enter. Don't know what that is.
It almost looks like a path there, too.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not sure what that is. That could be our hoped for animal exhibit. When we go back to the artwork, I'm sorry, the overhead photo, just quickly looking at that area, there is a clearing there, a rather large clearing there. No, I shouldn't say large, but a good size clearing there, and some work being done in just that same exact spot. You know, there's some space there. It could be a small animal exhibit.
Could be. I mean, it could be maybe, you know, almost like a macaw kind of thing. Just
sure.
Like, it could be something like that.
Sure.
But certainly not enough room for the hyenas, but, you know.
I wonder, Mike, could they be moving winged encounters to there?
Maybe part of it.
I mean, that would explain the birds.
Right. Well, I mean, the birds fly around the whole park. I mean, the whole Discovery Island right now. But maybe this would be like
where they would actually have the
land.
Show.
Yeah, I guess so. It could be.
You know, because right now it's kind of in a spot, kind of off to the side. I mean, if they're gonna maybe give it a little treatment and put it in a popular place.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, that's a thought that just came to my mind as I'm looking at this.
certainly not out of the realm of possibility.
And the gate behind you. The big giant gate leading off stage is what that is. I can't imagine that gate is anything more than that, because if you look at the concept, if you look at the overhead shot, you'll see there's a rather large path, you know, a truck-sized path, a road that leads all the way to the backstage area that crosses the train tracks. The one disappointment for me is that I don't see the train in this concept art. I was kind of hoping that the train would pass within eye shot of New Harambe or of the Harambe Market. May still do that. Certainly you'll hear it because it's really close. The train, you could throw a rock and hit the train as it comes by from certainly the right-hand corner of this concept art.
Right. So if you look at the concept art, you see that building, the blue building with the awning there, which, you know, look, it's almost like its own separate area.
Right.
And maybe that's where the Dole Whips are. I don't know.
Who knows?
But I've heard that they were going to move them over there as an aside. If you look to the right of that, there's like this orange kind of roof there, and maybe there's some additional seating. That would be just about where the train is, right?
Correct.
So maybe over in that area, you could see the train go by.
Yeah, I mean it's
not out of the realm of possibility.
No,
for sure.
I mean it's literally is with a matter of yards. 10, 20 yards from that point Mike's talking about to the train track. The train track is literally right behind that building. No more than a car's length behind that building. So you're going to hear it go through. There's no doubt about that. I'm also fascinated by the Kenyan flags, or what appears to be a Kenyan flag, that are hanging
right over
there.
Over the sort of the biggest building.
The biggest building and right over the Harambe Market sign.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even see that there. You're right.
Yeah. I'm fascinated by that, too. Well, this is the first piece of information we have. It is absolutely fascinating. It answers a lot of questions, and I think it makes us pine away a little more, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely.
Can't wait to hear even more about this. I would expect by the time you listen to this, Disney will have officially released something. We can only hope that they don't and allows us to talk about it on the next show. But is that anything else? Any other thoughts in your mind here about this before we go take a break?
No, this is kind of a last second thing, so I can't think of anything else. I'm sure, you know, a couple hours from now, I'm lying around, I'll think of something. But for now, I'm good.
All right, so we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, Mike is going to have the world news coming back on Radio Harambe in just a second. Jennifer Green of Destinations in Florida is the official travel partner of Radio Harambe and JomboEveryone.com. Jen can do everything you need done in order to book your next Walt Disney World vacation and have the time of your life. She is an expert in everything Disney and will remove all the stress of booking your trip. And she is as committed to conservation as we are. So every vacation you book, or even every quote you request, means Jen and Destinations in Florida will make a donation to the Jombo Everyone conservation effort. You can contact Jen directly by emailing her at jennifer.g@destinationsinflorida.com or by calling her directly at 443-424-0181. You can also head over to jomboeveryone.com and click the Destinations in Florida icon to get your vacation started. Seriously, what can be better than booking a Disney World vacation while helping to save wildlife? Welcome back to Radio Harambe. It is time for the world news, and coming to us from Spain, apparently, is Safari Mike with the news. Mike, what do we have on tap today?
Well, Dave, we're going to go to Future World, and we'll also go to the Grand Floridian. But first, let's go to World Showcase, where this time at Holly is Around the World at Epcot, which for people who don't know is the celebration of Christmas all around the different World Showcase pavilions. Well, there's going to be some new entertainment this year. There is, in Mexico, there is the Fiesta de Navidad, which will have dancers and mariachi band playing different songs from Mexico in a sort of interactive musical performance.
Cool.
A Moroccan storyteller invites guests to join her on a journey to experience the gaiety of festivals, holiday traditions, and celebrations that are like the spice of life across Morocco. That's the official blurb from the Disney Parks blog. Hmm. And in China, there is going to be a Chinese lion dance, which apparently brings good fortune and happiness for major holidays, such as the Lunar New Year and the Lantern Festival. So those are some of the new interesting entertainment options coming to the holidays around the world at Epcot.
Yeah, I enjoy the holidays around the world. It's fun.
You know, I think that might be the best of all the different – I mean, they celebrate Christmas all over the Walt Disney World. Holidays around the world might be the best one.
Oh, without question.
I like it better than Osborne Family Lights, for example.
Oh, without question. Yeah. Osborne Family of Lights, when it first opened, was great. Now it's just a crush of people. It's, you know, just...
It's still pretty good. But
it's good, yeah.
I do like the holidays around the world. It's just interesting with all the different ways the different countries celebrate Christmas and all that kind of stuff.
And it's much more relaxed nature as opposed to the frenetic pace and the, you know, craziness that is everything else holiday-related, you know. Not just Osborne, the other stuff as well.
Yeah, that's true. Speaking of Christmas, Dave, I'll move on to the next story.
Mm-hmm.
This year's Christmas parade, which of course gets taped at both Disney World and Disneyland, and it'll be happening the second week of December, the name of it will be the Disney Frozen Christmas Celebration. So I know you're excited about this, Dave, but apparently Anna and Elsa are taking over the famous Christmas Day parade at Walt Disney World.
I am finally starting to read people...
No.
Writing, are we taking this a bit too far now? You think maybe? You know, I think
it's finally starting to be oversaturated. People are finally starting to push back. Like, enough's enough.
And that's what you don't want. I mean, you don't want the movie and the songs and stuff to turn into a punchline, to turn into a cliche. And they're really running the risk of that now, you know. And certainly with Disney fans, they're running the risk of that because we're into the whole. We know some of the bad things that are a result of the success of this film, you know, like the rides and the maelstrom and all that kind of stuff. But now I think everybody else is starting to wonder: is there anything else these guys do besides Frozen?
Yeah.
You know,
it's getting to be a little much.
Yeah, over the last couple of years, the holiday morning Christmas parade is something that I always watch.
I know you loved it. You always recorded it.
Yeah, I always watch it. But over the last few years, it's gotten progressively, well, I shouldn't say progressively. It's not what it once was. It's so campy now, and you know, it was. It has its good years and bad years. It seems like in the last five or six, it's more bad than good. It's just it's turned from the coverage of a parade into sort of a canned commercial for Walt Disney World. Kind of that cheesy sort of Stacey Aswad kind of vibe to it. So I won't be paying any attention to the frozen parts, so whatever.
I don't know how much of it's going to be frozen, but other than
that, I won't even know what any of it means. So the frozen people come out, I won't know who it is. So
right. Well, I'm sure Anna and Elsa will be there to start it off with or kick it off. And be a float or something, right. But whatever.
And the snowman thing that doesn't look like a snowman, Olaf. But obviously is one.
Olaf, right.
I've never seen a snowman look like that, but okay. We have another story?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
I wasn't sure if we talked about this last time or not, but I think you said we did not. But in any event, Disney saved us by filing the notice of demolition today for the Sorcerer's Hat.
Right.
At Disney's Hollywood Studios. That is going bye-bye. Not sure when. We believe it's going to be early next year, but the permit for demolition has been filed.
An interesting choice.
Why?
Well, I'll tell you why. Because what we don't know, right, is what this is going to look like at the end. Now, my biggest problem with the Hollywood Studios is, in my opinion, Disney's version of a Six Flags park. It is a complete mishmash. There's no story told there anymore. There's no theme. There's nothing that kind of brings it all together like the other parks have. And even sometimes the other parks have more than one theme, like Epcot has two very separate themes. But they work together in synergy in a way. The Hollywood Studios has thrown that all out the door. It had one when it first opened up. It has nothing even resembling that now.
I mean, it's still not a Six Flags. I mean, a Six Flags.
No. What I'm saying is, it's a Six Flags park is like that. They have a lot of they have a lot of different kind of attractions that all have their own theme and their own separate look to it. And maybe they might have an area here that's all kind of themed. And I don't say not just Six Flags. I'm just talking about any kind of off the shelf park.
But those parks, I mean, each individual ride is, I mean, there's like a steel coaster. The only,
right.
The only theme for that Superman is it just has a picture of Superman in the line.
Sure. Don't get hung up on the Six Flags thing. I'm just saying it's sort of Disney's version of that.
You said it, not me.
But I said Disney's version of it. I didn't say it's like Six Flags. I said it was Disney's version, which means Disney obviously is going to do it a little bit more elaborately than Six Flags. But there's the point is there's no theme. There's nothing that brings them all together. There's no story being told, which is the word Imagineers always like to use.
The only part I would say wrong about that is just the Hollywood Boulevard and Sunset Boulevard. They do a nice job.
Right. But then that's you put the hat there and that story went out the window from every aspect. Now, are you going to bring that story back into the studios by removing the hat? Is that the purpose? And is this story going to work with all the other rumors that we're going to hear? Because where does Pixar place belong in Hollywood of the 1920s? It doesn't belong anywhere there, and all the other themes that we're hearing, Star Wars or whatever might be there.
Well, I think
what are we going to do? How are we going to go back? What does the hat accomplish? Removal of the hat accomplish? It doesn't, that's the question. Not that I think it shouldn't be done, but the question I have is when this is all done, what is it? What do we have? What are we left with?
I think what we're left with is a 1920s Hollywood section in the front, a Pixar place, in back where the studio backlot tours was, a Star Wars land over, around the Echo Lake area.
Mm-hmm.
The animation courtyard will probably remain essentially the same. They'll maybe tweak a few things here and there, but it's going to be like Magic Kingdom, four or five different lands,
which would be great.
I think that's what they're going for. And, I think the hat, that was huge would probably interrupt some of the sight lines for some of that. And so it also makes it difficult to view fireworks. So if they want to go back to performing fireworks at the studios, removing the hat is beneficial. It creates more of an open space there to view them. But anyway, I think that's what it accomplishes.
I mean, the hat is and has always been an eyesore. You know, I'm certainly on board with that. It was ridiculous to put it there to begin with.
Right. I mean, I don't dislike the hat, to be honest.
I just don't like where it is.
Correct.
Yeah.
They should put it in, like, All-Star Movies or Pop Century or, I don't know, out front of the park when you're walking in. There's the big hat.
Sure, sure.
That'd be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Because the park has no icon. You know, it has no one visual thing that sort of ties it together. But if you're not going to have a theme that works with that, with that icon, like, you know, the Tree of Life works from everywhere in the animal kingdom. If you're not going to have something that does, then there's no reason to have one. I mean,
I guess they're putting, from what I understand, they're putting the Earful Tower back on, like the, you know, some of the merchandise that has like the icons from all the parks, you know, that thing.
Right.
I don't know why they just don't use the Tower of Terror. I mean, that's the visual icon to me, anyway, of the Hollywood Studios.
It's not in the center of the park. Neither is the Earful Tower.
Right.
But that's
the Earful Tower.
Well, that's the fault behind the design of the park from day one. I mean, it looks like it was thrown together pretty quickly.
It was thrown together.
Yeah.
It was thrown together pretty quickly to beat Universal Studios out of the gate.
And that's what we have. So. I mean, an icon takes a long time to really, you know, make it work. And that's what they were trying with the hat, right? I mean, they were trying to create one.
It failed.
Yeah, it just didn't work. So, okay. Well, I'm glad to see progress here. And I'm sure a lot of Disney fans are jumping for joy over this because the hat was a true punchline, to use that phrase.
Yeah, I think most people are. Most people are generally happy about it,
Cool. What's next?
Dave, we're going to play your favorite game. Oh. Dave, guess how much this costs.
Oh, all right. Cool.
Are you ready?
Yeah, I wasn't prepared for this.
If you, as you may or may not recall, Cinderella's Royal Table at the Magic Kingdom is going down for refurbishment for a couple of months, beginning in January. Again, January 5th, which is a popular day because that's the right after the Christmas holidays. It's also my birthday.
When everybody's gone.
So, yeah.
Happy birthday, Mike. It's all closed.
I believe they closed Camp Mini-Mickey on my birthday last year. It was January 5th.
But I had these visions of you like Clark Griswold making it to the front door of Wally World on your birthday.
So, for those people who want a Cinderella breakfast, it's being moved to Citrico's at the Grand Floridian.
Really?
Why? I'm not sure why they pick Citrico's. But there will be a breakfast / brunch where you can meet Cinderella and some princesses. Dave, this is what you get.
Okay.
You get a basically a sit-down meal where you get a choice of salad or assorted fruits. Remember, this is breakfast / brunch. You get a choice of some sort of entree. This is not a buffet. The entrees are anything from like scrambled eggs, sausage, bacon, and breakfast potatoes, to, you know, something like steak and slow poached eggs with potatoes, or like a fish with angel hair pasta and something called aromatic tomato sauce, whatever that is. And then you get a dessert trio, and of course coffee and, you know, sodas included, as well as one specialty beverage. You also get to be able to participate in an interactive magical wishing ceremony with Cinderella and her princess friends. And wishing wands and wishing swords for little ones will be given out. For adults, how much do you think this breakfast meet and greet costs?
Breakfast meet and greet.
It's not a buffet, don't forget. It's just an entree.
It's not a buffet.
No.
So you're prepaying for... You're prepaying for your food, but you're picking a la carte?
Correct. You get a choice of one of about six or seven different things. And like I said, like one of them is grilled ham and a biscuit with slow poached eggs and sausage gravy. Another one is, you know, scrambled egg whites with grain cereal and Greek yogurt, you know, that kind of thing. And you get a dessert trio, whatever that. I'm sure it's those stupid little, you know what I'm talking about.
Stupid little
things. Those little cheesecake things, you know, those horrible things that they force down your throat with the dining plan.
Hmm. All right, so it's not an all-you-can-eat, so that changes things. And it's not a dinner, so we have to keep that in mind as well.
Mm-hmm. It's a breakfast food for the most part.
I would say it's Citrico, so it has to be a little expensive. I believe lunch at the Crystal Palace is somewhere around the $30 mark, $35. So I would say, since you're not getting alcohol or anything like that in here, I would say...
Well, it says one specialty beverage. I don't know what that means.
Yeah, but it won't... Could it be alcohol for
adults,
brunch?
For adults, not for kids. But well, it could be... At breakfast, it could be like a Bloody Mary or...
Okay, so I think I might overprice here, but I'll say $47, $48.
Very close. $49.99 for adults.
Yeah.
$31.99 for children ages 3 to 9. And for those on the dining plan, it's going to cost you El Duso, two of them.
$50 a person.
$50.
Wow. For brunch.
Oh, babe, by the way, I'm sorry. If I would have scrolled down, I could have told you that the specialty beverages were mimosa or a little champagne or basically a Bloody Mary. You know what we were talking about. You could also get a glass of wine, too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I added a couple of dollars when I thought it might have been that.
Right.
It's the Grand Floridian. I mean, it's for the lifestyles of the rich and famous. So, I mean, I guess that's... I don't know why that's an alternative to... I don't see why that has anything to do with Cinderella's royal table other than the meet and greet aspect of it.
Right, they just want to give you a chance to do it.
Yeah, but I mean, who would go over there? I mean, they're completely unrelated. I mean, so it's going to be $49.99. I wonder what breakfast at the... I wonder what the cost of breakfast at the Cinderella's royal table was.
I think it's about that.
God, man, that's gutsy. Charging the same price, but not doing it in the castle. I don't see it, man. I don't see it.
Part of the draw was to be able to, we ate in the castle.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that was the only draw. There was
girls might want to meet Cinderella and stuff. I mean, that's fine, but
sure. But correct. I mean, that was the draw.
So. Right, you're meeting Cinderella in her castle.
Interesting, interesting choice. People will do it, especially at the Grand Floridian. The privileged and splurgers that stay at the Grand Floridian tend to not worry about the value of their $50.
I suppose.
I guess. Because I don't know how they justify the other restaurant costs there, but okay. So what's next?
Dave, I'm so excited about this one.
Oh, good.
Finally, the My Magic or My Disney Experience app, whatever you want to call it, may have something useful.
Well, that's assuming that whatever you're about to say works properly.
That's true. Dave, are you familiar with Kidani Village? Like when you walk to the bus stops, there's that screen that tells you when the bus is expected to arrive?
Yes, which is incredibly inaccurate, but yes.
Oh, I've always found it to be quite accurate.
No, what I have found is that it is, by the time the bus shows up, it is accurate, but it changes throughout the whole time you're there. So there were, for instance, the last time I was there, wife and I went down to Kidani Village, got on, you know, actually it was just me. I was getting on the bus to, I think, the Animal Kingdom. Bus said it was going to be there at 8:13. I wanted to be there for like around rope drop, which was 9 o'clock. Then it changed to 8:17, and then it changed to 8:19, and then it changed to 8:22. And that's happened to us a couple of times, actually.
No, that never happened to me.
Yeah, it's happened to me more than once on a couple different occasions. Not so much that you would be. My point is, I don't think that's going to work well on the app. But so you're telling us that that's what's going to be on the app, huh?
Yes, they're testing that now, where you will be able to.
That's a great idea.
Look at your app. Yeah, if it works, obviously, It is a great idea, so that when you're, you know, huffing it down, you could look at your phone and you could say to your family, all right, we still got 10 minutes before the Magic Kingdom bus shows up, according to our app.
Yeah.
I think it's great.
Or you could look at your app and say, next one's coming in 5 minutes. We're never making it. So don't rush.
Right. So I love this idea. I think it's useful, again, if it works, which, you know, my Disney Experience app has some issues, as we've talked about, ad nauseum. But this is something that I could definitely see being quite useful.
Yeah, being somebody who uses the bus system a lot when I go there, mm-hmm. Because I don't really agree with the idea of the expense of renting a car, which most people will tell you to do. I think you can better use that money in other situations because you have a bus service that's free.
Sure, since you go to breakfast with Cinderella.
Sure, there you go. There's your money spent. I think this is great because it is a little infuriating. And if they can make this work, which I have no confidence that they will, because that app has been a disaster otherwise.
Possibly.
They can make it work, it would be terrific. You know, actually, Mike, if they could make that work, it would be of more use to me than the booking of the attractions in advance. It would be more of an enhancement to my experience at the parks than booking the attractions in advance. Right. So I'm all for it. I think it's a great idea.
I have one more if you want to talk about one
yeah,
more.
Sure.
Paperwork apparently has been filed to begin construction on the third Soarin' Theater for Epcot. So again, Disney, instead of building new attractions, is just adding capacity to the ones that are in disrepair.
Disrepair?
Yeah, sure. Soarin' is terrible, the film. They need to do something about that film.
Right, but that's not what adding seats does, though.
No, I was just being snarky. Sarcastic.
Gotcha.
Yeah, snarky.
Okay.
No, they're adding, instead of, you know, building a really cool another e-ticket attraction in Future World, like maybe where Body Wars is or where Imagination is.
Right.
Their solution is just to add a third set of, you know, a third theater for Soarin'. So to keep down the lines, as we all know, the Soarin' lines get pretty outrageous, especially during the height of the busy seasons.
Right.
So they are building apparently a third theater.
I always found it strange that they would do this. And I'm really, honestly, very surprised that this rumor is apparently happening. Because I always thought that when Disney has lines like this at a ride, that they kind of like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are other places you can go to. There are other rides. It gives them an impetus to build something close, you know, something on the other side of the park. You know, it moves crowds to certain areas. They can supplement that area. It's a big thing. You know, it's an attraction that they could say this is a headliner. And you know, you don't have a headliner with 20-minute lines.
Yeah.
As much as we would all like that. I always thought that there is just a little bit about these kind of e-tickets where they really kind of want, you know, some rides to be long waits. It just kind of fits.
Sure, but know? I mean, I think Soarin' and Toy Story Mania in particular, those long waits get crazy outrageous.
Yeah.
And what they don't want is they don't want guests standing in line for 5 hours. They would rather have them standing in line for 2 hours and going through the shops and the restaurants for the other three.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think the new philosophy, and this is part of what My Magic Plus was supposed to do and has apparently utterly failed at it, is to get people out of lines and into gift shops and restaurants.
Yeah.
And bars and things like that. To me, My Magic Plus has just added waits. I mean, my experience with My Magic Plus was we waited on lines that we never did before.
Right.
When we were down there last and towards the end of August.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think this is part of what they think is the solution. This and the Toy Story Mania, which are, you know, it would be fine if they just built like another great attraction. It would alleviate some of the pressure on Toy Story Mania and on Soarin' and stuff like that. But instead of doing that, they're just building more capacity for the attractions they already have. Because obviously that's a lot cheaper.
I would assume it's a lot cheaper.
Oh, yeah.
I think, because I think the Soarin' Theater is a and the ride mechanism is gigantically expensive. So I'm not 100% sure that, you know, adding a frozen dark ride might not be a better, cheaper way to go.
Too.
Yeah, but you know what I mean. I mean, they could do, you know, I'm just surprised. I really am surprised. But they have a lot of space back there for this. How they're going to shoehorn stuff into Toy Story Mania is going to be a little bit more of a logistical problem. But they have a lot. They could certainly build another theater back there. There's a lot of open land that they can use behind Epcot, and they already have the, you know, the wherewithal to do it. So I you know, but I am surprised. I didn't think things like this would ever happen. I don't see why they would want a 15-minute wait at their biggest attraction. But that's not
well.
Here
this, yeah, but even if, well, think of it this way. I mean, if you have a Soarin' that has 200-minute waits at the, you know, during the busy season, I mean, another theater is just going to cut that down to what, 75-minute waits?
Right. But here's the thing: the times that you're talking about, Mike, there's always going to be something that has that wait. There's always going to be a big one that they can't get. They can never build enough capacity for.
Right.
I mean, every park has that, and there's just so many people there in Christmas. There's no way, you know, in the busy times, there's no way they can really make it work. I think it really comes down to more what you were saying before about the My Magic Plus. They're unable to deliver on attractions for people to book these things like they're promising, you know, for the Big E ticket in Epcot, of which really there's only two,
right.
You know, one and a half, because I don't even think Test Track comes up to Soarin's level of popularity.
Not quite.
Yeah.
Not quite.
Yeah. So there's only one real big one. And if people can't get on it, well, you're talking about making promises that you're unable to keep, and that's the only one they're going to remember.
And
you know, you have a lot of rides and a lot of things in other places. You know, if somebody can't book Kilimanjaro Safaris, but yet book Expedition Everest, they may be okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many options in the Magic Kingdom, but
sure,
really,
sure.
There's only that one in Epcot, and that's. That's got to be a problem. I mean, that's got to be an endless source of complaints at customer relations.
One thing it might do, which would be a benefit, would be to eliminate the tier system at Epcot. I mean, if you can be able to get rid of the tier system by adding a lot more FastPass Plus capability at Soarin', plus, you know, the Frozen attraction coming in about a year or so from now, or whatever it is. That would be a benefit so that we don't have the tier system that we have now at Epcot.
Yeah, well, we've been calling for that from the minute it was introduced.
it was awful from the get-go. I agreed.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. Okay, is that it for the world news?
Well, the only thing I would add, Dave, is follow along the Mighty Men of Mouse draft. Our friends at the Mighty Men of Mouse are doing...
You're obsessed with this.
...is doing a fantasy Disney draft. Where I have to draft the perfect vacation day, 2 days for a family of four. I get one hotel, six restaurants, you know, one of each meal for 2 days, and seven attractions or experiences. There are 22 teams, which means there's gonna be slim pickings at the end. And we're after about a week and a half, we're only midway through round four. I have so far my team is. In the first round, I drafted Wild Africa Trek and then the Hoop-De-Doo dinner. And then my second go-around, I picked Body Wars and... And the original Journey to Imagination, yeah.
Oh, so it doesn't have to be something that's there now.
Correct. The rules on that is that if it's something completely different, you can take both things. So in other words, you could take the Winnie the Pooh ride as well as Mr. Toad's. Okay.
So they can't be.
So those are two different attractions. So the next person can get Mr. Toad's, but you can't do is if it's just sort of an update. So
I see.
The original Star Tours. If somebody takes the new Star Tours, the original one is off limits.
Gotcha.
But it's fascinating. I don't know what the hell I'm going to do when it comes around to me next.
So how come you didn't get a good attraction in their first round? They were all
gone. Kilimanjaro Safaris, Expedition Everest. Space Mountain, Splash Mountain, the things in the first 21 picks, which was, you know, everybody before me, they took every deluxe hotel, like the Grand Suite. So that was like the most popular thing to do at the beginning was to take like, you know, the big suite and contemporary and all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
All the major mountains and attractions.
Right.
And the only restaurant that went before me was the Victoria and Albert's, you know, chef's table deal. So I decided, I thought Wild Africa Trek was better than any of the attractions that were out there.
Yeah, so far that,
I think it's better than any of the attractions that were picked. I mean, why would you pick Kilimanjaro Safaris when you could take out Wild Africa Trek?
And what was the restaurant you said you picked?
I picked the Hoop-Dee-Doo Review.
Okay, so far, the only thing on your list that I would even want to do is Wild Africa Trek.
What are you talking about? I picked the original Journey to Imagination.
Oh, that's right.
And Body Wars.
I didn't like Body Wars. But
well, when it came back to me, I did not have a thrill ride.
So you know, that was the best you had, huh?
Star Tours was gone. You know, pretty much any kind of thrill ride was gone off the board, like a major thrill ride. So I figured I had to have at least one, so I took it. But it's going. It's everybody gets 12 hours to pick.
12. So, this will take years.
I think somebody calculated it could take 150 something days. But it's moving faster than that. You know, we've been doing it for about a week and a half, and we're into the middle of round four.
And this is a Twitter thing, I would imagine?
You can follow it at MMOM Draft, or at MMOM Draft. It's the Mighty Men and Mouse is a podcast. It's an excellent podcast, and they always say nice things about us, but they do a very good job. So, you know, listen to them, follow the draft, and see what – I mean, at some point in time, I might be picking, you know – Mike Fink keelboats or something like that will be like one of my major attractions.
I was going to say you'll be picking the lockers at Cali River Rapids.
Right, exactly.
All right. Well, we're going to take one last break, and when we come back, we're going to open up the Lost Animal Kingdom files. Coming back on Radio Harambe in just a second. Safari Mike calls home when he's not living in a tent in the jungle, is a locked and well-guarded file cabinet. One of those drawers is marked Lost DAK Files. This file is home to all of the ideas and projects which never made it to Disney's Animal Kingdom, often came very close. Somehow the information all got to Safari Mike over his years of travel. Most famous of these lost files, for example, would be the often pined away for Beastly Kingdom, but there are many others in this cabinet, which were developed for the Animal Kingdom, yet never made it into the park. At least, not so far. So for today's Lost DAK file, and you're going to hear a few more of these as the years go by on this podcast.
Years? Really going to last years?
Well, we're beyond a year already. We're going to head over to Dinoland USA for what was to be an e-ticket attraction, I would assume, called the Excavator. Now, Mike, from its name, one could deduce that there would be a relationship between this attraction and the Boneyard, correct?
Correct. That is correct. And actually, Dave, go ahead.
It certainly fits. You could hear already how it goes into the theme of the Dino Institute and the story behind that with the work being done in Dinoland.
Correct.
So tell us what this was to be.
Interestingly enough, Dave, as we all know, the Dinoland has a very specific kind of backstory. It's very detailed, and every part fits a certain place. Well, if the excavator was going to be built, that backstory would be a little different than it is today. The excavator was where an old sand and gravel company was. And the original conceit of this area was that they were building this sand and gravel. You know, they had this business going, and one day as the trucks were loading up their gravel and stuff, down plopped a T-Rex skeleton in the back of one of these trucks. And of course, once they found that out, you know, the story went from there that, you know, scientists came in and sort of took over the site. Chester's and Hester's, instead of being just this kind of roadside gas station, was still a gas station in the original idea, but it would have been one that really was making money off of selling gas to all these work guys.
Oh.
And to the archaeological, the sand and gravel company that was being built back then. Now, obviously, after this was, you know, these skeletons were found, the idea was that this benefactor was going to come in and buy up the sand and gravel pit and start an institute to study dinosaurs. Eventually, the area of the sand and gravel stuff where they had all this steel work and these mine cars coming in and out started to become in disrepair as they were digging for dinosaurs instead of working a sand and gravel pit. And it eventually became very kind of run down, that area. The excavation work moved nearby to what would now be the boneyard. And this excavator area would have been sort of, you know, not in used anymore. Except the idea or the story was that the interns and residents or whatever you want to call them from the Dino Institute, the students, were opening it back up just for funds. And they were starting to power it back up because they thought it would be a hoot to ride around in these mine cars. So in the ride itself, as you were walking online, you were going to walk past all sorts of, you know, beware of this and don't go here and danger and closed and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And you would ride these mine cars, essentially. It would be very similar to Big Thunder Mountain, kind of that kind of look to it. But it looks, at least from the concept art that you probably have seen, it does look a little bit more thrilling, a little bit more like a steel coaster than Big Thunder Mountain. It looks higher, a little bit more in depth. And you would go past dinosaurs, and you would even at one point, skeletons of dinosaurs. And you would even at one point get close to the actual Chester's and Hester, where there would be like these kind of art deco kind of like designs, just like how Chester and Hester have it, where they're, you know, use tin cans to make dinosaur statues and stuff. You would go past a couple of those, and one of them would actually sort of almost spring to life and sort of scare you as it like looks like it was going to come at you at one point in time. So that was kind of the ride itself. And again, the backstory would have bled over to the Dino Institute because this alleged benefactor was the one who became so obsessed with dinosaurs that he really wanted to go back in time and see them themselves. Hence, he starts the Dino Institute, which began going into the technology of time machines, and you get the Time Rover.
There is basically one, just to kind of frame from what Mike is saying here about the aesthetics, there's basically one piece of a concept art that has made the rounds and is sort of readily available on the internet that you see in all the stories about this. And it is kind of more concept art for the boneyard. And in the background of the boneyard, you'll see a giant mound of dirt. Giant mound of dirt. And what looks like a traditional wooden roller coaster, which there's obviously a great history and a very grand history of wooden roller coasters in this country that, you know, are all over the place. And it's how it ties in with the boneyard seemed to be sort of a synergy. If you think about it now, they could never have built it in the space that they picked for the boneyard. But the synergy there and the change in the story is what fascinates me so much. I guess when they dropped this plan, that's when the story had to kind of
edit. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, be massaged around whatever was going to be there.
Right. And the focus became Restaurantosaurus and this old fishing lodge where they just happen to find dinosaur bones, as opposed to a sand and gravel company that dug up the dinosaur bones.
Yeah, I mean, the you know, we can only imagine we had some sort of budget cut somewhere that led us to that decision.
Absolutely. I mean, this was on the drawing board up until as they were building the park in the mid-90s. And, you know, we've gone over this story before. The cost of building state-of-the-art behind-the-scenes stuff for the animals and things like that was just getting too high. And the first thing they obviously cut was the Beastly Kingdom, which was going – the plan was for that to come later. And eventually it was decided that the excavator was not in at least the original budget for the Animal Kingdom. They figured that – and all along Countdown to Extinction was going to be along. This was not a substitution for Countdown to Extinction. This was to be built alongside Countdown. They figured, you know, having Countdown was enough of a thrill ride to anchor the area itself. So instead we got the Dinosaur Jubilee. And instead of bringing the excavator where that was, they brought Chester and Hester's Dinorama instead. And there's a couple of different reasons for that. Number one being, of course, cost being the most important one. But also one of the things that they got some complaints on early on were, you know, Countdown to Extinction and Dinosaurs really wasn't good for kids at the time. Right. So it was scarier than it is today. And we've all talked about how they dialed back, Countdown to Extinction in terms of its thrills and frightening aspects. And they also wanted to add some more kid-friendly attractions, hence, you know, Primeval World and Triceratops Spin.
Right. And the, you know, we can't sort of understate the budget aspect of this, right, and also the a giant wooden roller coaster, an e-ticket wooden roller coaster, if that's what they're going to build, is obviously an expensive thing. Not as expensive as one would imagine, because like I said, people have been building them forever, and they are really cool a lot of times. But what the theming of it, if you look at the pictures, the theming of it would have been absolutely perfect. Certainly aesthetically it would have been great. But yeah, I mean, so it's sort of another example of this is what all these lost DAK files will probably turn into, is sort of this, you know, another sad example of the budget cuts that went into this. Now, a lot of people talk about how maybe Disney kind of didn't realize how much money they needed to invest into the animals and, you know, the care and feeding of such a thing and all this sort of, you know, offstage sort of, you know, houses that they live in and all that kind of stuff. Perhaps those costs were not really calculated well enough. And then when Disney started, we all know that they went way over budget on the Animal Kingdom, even though they cut much of what they had said was in the plans out. They still went well over their budget. Now that budget, I mean, I believe they built the whole thing for less than $1 billion. Now they can't build a roller coaster for less than $500 million. It seems like, so, you know, it is amazing. But this is one, Mike, that I truly would love to have seen. I know we want to be kid friendly, and I know that we eventually brought in the e-ticket later on with the Expedition Everest. You know, there's only so many ways they can make dinosaurs come to life. They're going to do it once. But to play on the theme of the dinosaurs and the excavation of them and the digging of the fossils and stuff, I thought this was a great idea.
Yeah, and we were talking a little bit about some of the concept art. There are a couple of other things that you can find online. I know Jim Hill has a few things, and maybe we could post them one of these days with a little bit more of a blurb than the original excavator plus DAC files that I did.
Right.
But there's a good one of, actually, you could see, like, the idea is that, you know, this excavator, this is the mine car is like falling apart, and at any point in time, this thing was collapsing, and that was going to add to the thrill.
Right.
But there's one piece of concept art where the track actually goes through a dinosaur skeleton.
Yeah.
Like a T-Rex. And there's also another piece of concept art of sort of this artsy kind of, you know, this kind of campy looking dinosaur.
So, yeah,
where it's like the body's made out of a car.
Right.
And it's like, well, where it's sort of collapsing on top of you as you drive by. And that's when you get close to Chester and Hester. So there is kind of a lot of fun stuff that would have been part of this attraction that I do kind of regret not being there.
Yeah, this is a really cool one. This would have been cool. I really like this concept. I like the change in the theme. I like the change in the story. I mean, this would really be cool. Anything else about it before we go?
And it looks like you actually go through that big mound of dirt. I don't know if you take a look at the concept art that you were talking about before. It looks like you actually go through the dirt itself.
Yep.
Which they could have added. There could have been some fun stuff to add to there too. So
going in and out of a mountain on a train type thing. Where did that end up being used later on?
Yeah, I don't know. But as they say in Imagineering, no good idea ever dies. It just sort of changes.
It morphs into something more affordable. The end of that saying.
Yeah, well. And, you know, so they took some of this and made it into Expedition Everest, obviously. And this was, you know, there were some thoughts about putting this in, for example, Hong Kong Disney. It was one idea to sort of make this kind of attraction there, although, of course, that never actually happened.
Right.
So, you know, unfortunately, when Disney's Animal Kingdom first opened, there was some complaints, and they were, number one, there wasn't enough rides, and number two, there wasn't enough rides that were kid-friendly.
Right.
And Disney decided early on that they weren't going to spend the money on another attraction that was not kid-friendly. So that's why we got Chester and Hester's sort of Dinorama, which was also, of course, a hell of a lot cheaper than building a major e-ticket attraction.
A heck of a lot cheaper. That was the reason why it's there. Let's be honest.
Yeah. I mean, I like the area itself, Chester and Hester's. Yeah. This is obviously where exactly what it was. I'm more of a fan of it than anybody else, but I understand that it's flat rides that, you know, shelf rides that didn't cost them much at all. They could have done a lot better, and you expect a lot better out of Disney than that. I mean, I think they did great for what they had, but, you know.
Oh, certainly. For an afterthought, they definitely did do a great job with it, certainly in detail and in theming and everything they really could do that. It'll never beat an e-ticket, and you'll probably never see another one put into that space. I think what you have there is what you're going to have. Mm-hmm. But this would have been a nice one, and I do long to see the day when we add to the dinosaur theme there. Don't know if that's in the cards anytime soon. I think Big Blue Men are going to be more of what we're going to be hit with than dinosaurs, but we could always hope.
We can, Dave. We can.
Anything else on it before we go?
No, that's it.
Yeah. So there we go. We're going to put the file away, back in the cabinet, back in the cave, never to be heard from again. That is our first, I don't know if it's a first, because we did do the Beastly Kingdom. This is our second lost DAK file. So stay tuned in the future for possibly more on these. There are quite a few, believe it or not, of attractions that went pretty far in the development stage and never actually made it to the park.
And there's also extinct Disney Animal Kingdom files too.
There is, and those are things that are no longer there. We have quite a few of those, and we often might get requests for that. I get that a lot.
I saw a request for that, actually.
Yeah, we get that request quite a bit, to go back and look at some of the nostalgia of the park. It's hard to believe a park that's not even 20 years old yet could have nostalgia, but it does.
You're right.
Well, thanks once again for tuning in to Radio Harambe. We ask, as always, you subscribe to the show on iTunes, leave us a review there, hopefully a 5-star review. Those reviews really do help to get the word out for the show. Don't forget to check our website, jomboeveryone.com. You're going to find there everything you need to know about the Animal Kingdom. Also, while you're there, check out our store. We sell some great sort of unofficial Animal Kingdom merchandise. All of the profits from all that goes to our conservation partners. Please do check that out. Also, feel free to follow us on Twitter. I am at Radio Harambe. Mike is at Jombo Everyone. We are also on Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, and YouTube. You can find all those links at jomboeveryone.com. I guess that's it for Safari Mike. I'm Dave McBride. Kwaharini, go well. And thank you for tuning in to Radio Harambe. Kwaku walfamela ko na kungu na